Apple will probably just get bought out by MicroStrategy if they don't get on a Bitcoin standard. Those dollars are just going to dilute like a melting ice cube. I'm incredibly bearish on Apple, incredibly bearish on some of these other tech companies because they don't have Bitcoin on the balance sheet. I do get that 2017 feeling again, where it's like we get to January and it's like a 10K and then it just starts growing. And then before you know, we're at 21K by the end of the year. And I do get that sense next year where we just keep going up throughout the year and we reach some crazy price at the end of the 2025. This cycle, I'm seeing something a little bit different. We're seeing a lot more TradFi guys coming in from like the JP Morgans, the Bloombergs, the Fidelities. Millennials get it. We grew up through the 2008 crash. We grew up through 9/11. So we inherently don't trust our government. We're going to see a ton of new innovative apps come through.
Hi, Kyle. How are you doing?
Pretty good. Doing pretty good. It's a beautiful Wednesday morning here in Austin, Texas. Very sunny. It's getting right around winter time, so everything's getting a little bit more colder and all that kind of stuff. So it's great weather.
I heard that Austin, I talked with someone, I forgot with whom I talked about that, but I talked to someone from Austin recently, and they said, like, oh, Austin is kind of a Bitcoin city. It's a lot happening there.
Yeah, there's right now we're inside of Plub Lab, which is located at the Littlefield building in off of 6th Street in Congress, which is like the main area of town. And then right next door to us is Unchained. And then right next door to us is the Bitcoin Commons. And so, yeah, we've pretty much taken over this entire floor as Bitcoiners in this building. And the goal is at some point to take over the whole building, which is like, I think like 10 or 12, 14 stories. Something like that, or floors, I should say.
Wow!
But yeah, that's we have a ton of meetups from here in Austin up north. Pretty much the entire state of Texas is pretty flooded with meetups, communities, and different sorts of pockets. But Austin is the most vibrant, I think, in the United States as far as like concentrated amount of Bitcoiners in different areas, whether it's mining, development, startups, capital, pretty much everywhere. Say
how big are those meetups? Are like the 50 people there or like 100 people there? Like how big is?
I mean, we'll start knowing here pretty soon, but last cycle it was like in the 150s to 200 for meetups, and I think as the price keeps going up, I think we'll start seeing more. Tomorrow's BitDev, so I'm pretty sure we'll see a lot more people tomorrow, and then we have an Austin Bitcoin Club that we do once a month, and that'll be probably even bigger than the Bit Devs, and then we have a design meetup, a Austin Bitcoin Design Club as well too. So we have a lot of offerings here in Austin if you're a Bitcoiner. Stuff for the plebs, stuff for the devs, stuff for the creative people, and then we have a good founders network, I would say, especially among us Bitcoiners who are doing startups. So
it's America in itself is a really interesting country to like attracts a lot of talent, attracts a lot of people. And I think Texas makes a really good case for Bitcoiners to even like move there. Especially like it's a first world country. There's a lot of, development happening. And now maybe with like, even on a federal level, if there's like a lot of, positive change for Bitcoin happening and not like hostility towards it. This would be major for America and also for Texas. That's really great to see there. I mean, also in the German speaking area, there's a lot of great things happening, but we have like meetups with like 30, 40, 50 people. 50, it's like when it's really big. I mean, it's also like a small city, but Vienna still has like 1.5 million people on there. I don't know. How big is Austin actually?
It's actually a really small, like, kind of city. It's split into, there's the middle, like it's called 35. It's the interstate. And then there's two halves. There's the west side and the east side. And then there's north of the river and south of the river. And it's kind of split like a compass. So it's actually a very small, used to be a pass through town where you pass through it to get to Dallas. But these days it's becoming more of a destination for Bitcoiners and founders and developers who want to like interact with some of these other concentrated Bitcoiners in this kind of this little area. I would say at this point we probably have more, at least here in the financial district downtown, we probably have more Bitcoin companies than we do barbecue shops, which is saying a lot because we have a lot of barbecue shops here in Austin, Texas.
I just looked it up. Austin is actually smaller than Vienna. So this speaks a lot. Like it's not that huge of a city. And it has way more people on the meetup. There's a lot more happening. And it just like gives me that overall vibe that America is also in the Bitcoin revolution, the same with the internet revolution, just far ahead. It's just way bigger than way bigger. It is at the size where Europe should be. Like it should Europe should take a lot of inspiration from that, but they're not. They're actually going in the different direction of that, and I really don't like that. But it's great to see that there's things happening in America. What's your current like in America? A lot of things happened this year with the ETF. We had of course the Bitcoin halving. Now we had the election with Trump. Everything like what's the current state for you, and what do you make of all the things that happened this year?
Yeah, I think for me, I can kind of separate the politics and all that stuff from what I do on a daily basis. But looking at it from like my personal lens, I think it's all good for Bitcoin. I think overall, we were in a situation where the previous cabinet or whatever you want to call them in office were probably not doing right by Americans, and so I think it was definitely a change that we needed to see one way or another. However you feel about it, I think that's just the overall kind of hard truth to it all. And I think things are very positive right now in America, at least here in Texas. I know here in Austin and specifically what we do here, like there have been Bitcoiners building here since about 2015, 2013, you know, back when Pierre Richard and Bitstein started it, you know, out of UT. So and I've heard even stories that it went beyond that too as well. So I think here in Austin, especially in Texas, I think Bitcoin has been a thing for a really long time, even in the 2010s. And I think there has always been a concentrated amount of Bitcoiners. Because I think Texas just in general falls in with the same kind of ethos as Bitcoin when it comes to freedom and it comes to self-sovereignty and it comes to being able to transact freely with whoever you want. I think we as a state, you kind of get that ingrained when you're taking Texas history in elementary and middle school and stuff like that. You're kind of taught these things at an early age in Texas as a student. So I think that's why I think we see a lot of Bitcoiners here in Texas is because a lot of what we have going on here, there's just enough room for the pie to grow for everybody. And I think we all kind of move together, even though we might not see each other or talk to each other all the time. We all kind of have a good baseline on things moving together forward, at least in Texas. But I think the rest of the United States, I think everything has been a plus. You know, we're seeing it in the price this week, right? I think we reached another new all-time high. So it's incredibly bullish if you're working in Bitcoin right now, or if you're doing something around it.
It's really hard for me these days because I usually record and then like 1, 2, sometimes even 3 weeks after that, I only publish it because I have a backlog. I sit there and edit and like, oh, we talked about a $73,000 price and now we are over 90,000. And I'm like, oh shit, like it seems like that episode is so old. And sometimes I just cut out the small pieces where we talk about price. But like we're sitting now at like 94 or something like that. I think we hit briefly 95, what I heard, but I'm not sure about that. So maybe when I release that, we are at like 110 or something like that. Would be fun to see.
Sure. It's wild, man. I think this cycle has been a little bit different because we had such a horrible bear market. I think if you were a company building during this bear market, like it was, at least from what I've heard, this is my first time building during it, but from what I heard, it was like the worst bear market since like the teens to build in. So I'm very much looking forward to what we've been experiencing in the past month or so, because after a while it can just become very very dark.
do you expect from that also a bigger bull market, because we have kind of so much potential and it was kind of like stuck in there and now the champagne bottle pops?
Yeah, I think I don't like to give predictions, but just this, I mean, this is personally what I think. I'm not speaking for Plab Lab or anything, but I think personally, I get the feeling that, and these are just like abstract feelings, nothing for sure. And there's nothing I see there, but I do get the feeling that we're going to be pumping, you know, pretty much all year next year. I do get that 2017 feeling again, where it's like, you know, we get to January and it's like a 10K and then it just like, you know, or it's at 7K or whatever it was in 2017. And then it just starts growing. And then before you know, we're at 21K by the end of the year. And I do get that sense next year where like maybe we start off at 70 or 80 or whatever it is. And then we just keep going up throughout the year and we reach some crazy price at the end of 2025. I do think that is a possibility, but these are just feelings.
Where do you think this next wave of Bitcoin adoption up outside of the Bitcoin price, like really like the, what was the next like story of Bitcoin, the next adoption wave of Bitcoin, the next people that come in Bitcoin?
Yeah. I mean, I couldn't tell you on the buying side, but I can tell you from what I do on a daily basis, which is like Plub Lab. And what we do is we work with founders and early stage startups and we try to get them to success. And what I saw last cycle was a little bit different. I saw a lot of people coming in from the general tech space, whether that was Google or Apple or, you know, Adobe or PayPal. They were coming in to start building on Bitcoin. Like it was that's where a lot of founders were coming from, at least from what I was seeing on the ground here in Austin. And I think this cycle, I'm seeing something a little bit different. We're seeing a lot more TradFi guys coming in from like the JP Morgans, the Bloombergs, the Fidelities. Like I'm seeing more of these type of guys come in this cycle who want to do their own company. And I think that's the biggest difference that I've seen this cycle compared to last cycle. Last cycle felt more tech oriented people coming in to build Bitcoin companies. And this cycle feels like more general, like traditional finance individuals that are wanting to go off and see if they can have a go at it, you know, this cycle. And that's kind of where I'm seeing a lot of like the building happening. I think the other interesting thing is I do feel Bitcoin is at this level where I don't know if the mainstream will ever get it as far as like some of the nuances and stuff like that. So I do think there'll definitely need to be some easier onboarding when it comes to onboarding these Generation Z, I guess you could call them. I forget what they're called, but I think it's going to require a different sort of like onboarding to get them, because I do think they're a different sort of generation that are going to require different expectations when it comes to Bitcoin. And when I see the millennial generation, at least here in America, a lot of the Bitcoin stuff, I think we inherently get because, you know, we got priced out when it comes to housing or when it comes to, you know, holding on to traditional stocks or stuff like that. I think millennials get it. We grew up through the 2008 crash. We grew up through 9/11. So a lot of the stuff, we inherently don't trust our government if you grew up during that time. I do think that the Generation Z, I do think they are going to require a different sort of onboarding to get them into Bitcoin. And I think that's going to come through a wave of new types of apps. And that's kind of what I'm getting at. I think there's going to be a new way to onboard some of these types of individuals that will kind of electrify their brains into thinking in like sat denominations.
That's super interesting. And yeah, it's called Generation C, like set. I know it because I'm still in it.
Okay.
I'm the higher end of it. 2 years older than I would be millennials. Okay. I think it's from 12 to 27 years old right now.
Oh, interesting.
Okay. So that's kind of the age range.
What got you into Bitcoin?
It's really interesting because when you look at the demographics of Bitcoiners, when I just look at my channel, so my channel has around 50 to 100,000 Bitcoiners watching every month. So it's like a good amount of people where you can extract already some statistics. And I'm myself 26 years old. And even though I'm so young, my audience is on average like 47, 48, around 50 years old. I tell this all the time. I have 3 times more people above 65 than I have under my age. So that's huge. I have like 0.2% of people under 18. Like, even though I'm young, even though I'm Gen Z, there are so many older people that watch me, older people just older than me. So that's super interesting. What got me into Bitcoin, I was into stocks, and everyone kept bothering me in 2020 with Bitcoin. I'm like, hey, what's your thoughts on Bitcoin? Why is Bitcoin? And I was 3 years from 2017 to 2020, I really thought Bitcoin is a scam in 3 years straight. And so people were also like, why is Bitcoin a scam? Why do you believe that? Because I was really big on stocks, on Tesla, Apple, Facebook, all the tech stocks, because I come from tech. At some point it just made sense to look it up a little bit closer. I told that story many times on the podcast, so I will cut it a little bit short. I basically had one weekend where someone in the week bothered me so much with Bitcoin. I was like, I want to prove him wrong. And I also discovered that I was running out of arguments to make against Bitcoin when he was talking with me. And so like Friday to Sunday, I was like, that's my Bitcoin weekend. I will just gather all the information why Bitcoin is a scam. Yeah, and on Monday, I bought my first Bitcoin. Because amazing. I was discovering I was actually wrong. So that's how I came into Bitcoin. And ever since I got into Bitcoin, it took me then a year to go all in. And then it took me 1 year more to also speak about Bitcoin. And then 1 year more to start my podcast. So that's kind of my story in Bitcoin. And now 1 year later, I'm here and have my podcast.
Yeah. And I think you have like close to 300 plus episodes.
Now like 312 episodes. Yeah.
That's amazing. That's absolutely amazing.
Yeah, but I think we need different ways to get to Gen Z. As you said, like millennials, they know they have a big pain point. They know why they needed it, and that's why also that's such a huge cohort of actually who are Bitcoiners. Gen Z, especially like if you're like 20 years old. Most of them are still living with the parents, or maybe are just like now slowly moving out. They're maybe in the students. They're getting a lot of subsidies. They're getting like a lot of still handout money. So they don't even think maybe too much about money. So we really have to catch them differently. And I should do that. Actually, a small cousin of mine is recently went into Bitcoin, with like 17 years old. So it would be really fun also to interview him, because he's not so deep in the Bitcoin community, but he really saves all his money in Bitcoin. Would be interesting to get his. But back to you. What is kind of like your main mission in Bitcoin, especially also with PlebLab, what you're building?
Yeah, I think for the most part, I mean, we started PlebLab in 2021, and it was just a group of individuals that wanted to help each other with their individual startups. At the time, I was producing and working and with other Bitcoin podcasts, and it was like this kind of once in a lifetime opportunity where, you know, the Austin scene was getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And me and a couple friends just happened to be running the meetup at the time, the Bitcoin meetup at the time, which was Austin Bitcoin Club. And from that came out PlebLab. Like we brought in a lot of people who went off and made some amazing, startups and products and in the space. And I think at the time we were all just trying to like kind of help each other, you know, as far as like accelerate our learning, accelerate with each other, accelerate our individual products and startups. And I think everything kind of came to a head in early 22 when, you know, people came to us and they're like, is PlebLab going to raise money? Like, would you guys raise money? And at the time, my co-founder wanted to do an accelerator because he was from San Francisco and had aspirations of doing something like that. And I had no idea what any of that stuff was back then. I was just kind of still green. And I think at the time, I think it was kind of good that it all played out the way it did, because now here we are 4 years later and or 2-3 years later, and we're, you know, we're one of the premier destinations to come to if you're going to do like a Bitcoin company. You know, a lot of what we do nowadays is help these early stage startups and try to get them to success. And what I mean by success is, you know, we want to get them to like a pre-seed, or if they're looking to get a grant, or if they're just looking to bootstrap their business, we want to help them achieve some sort of positive revenue in that aspect. So I think my mission today is to find those individuals, get them to Austin, and you know, really help them get to the dreams that they have and they want to build. And I think everybody in the lab, when we kind of come together collectively, I think we all inherently just kind of feel and believe that. And it's always been a really special thing at Plub Lab is, you know, people just usually kind of just always want to, we just attract the right type of talent here, I would say. There's been some times in the past where, you know, people are like, how do you keep something like that, you know, special together for a really long time? And I think it really does start, you know, with the individuals in the room and everybody trying to help each other get to that next level. And yeah, it's been one of the most, I would say, at least for me personally, I think it's one of the most significant things I've ever done in my life. I don't know of anything more impactful that I could be doing right now, especially in Bitcoin. I personally think that having more Bitcoin businesses is going to lead us to hyper-Bitcoinization. I don't think that happens through any other way. I think you're going to have to replace a lot of these, or maybe not replace, but at least inspire some of these already existing individual companies and products and stores and the like to adopt Bitcoin. I think the only way to do that is to put pressure on them in the open market. So I do think that where we are this cycle, I think that we're going to see a ton of new innovative apps come through. And I think, like, we have one in house right now called Jippy, and they're working on a gamification app that's kind of building, it's the first kind of like Pokemon Go for like Bitcoin, which, you know, on the outside sounds kind of like, you know, like, oh, why would you build that? But I think when we were talking earlier about, you know, trying to appeal to a different generation, you know, the average attention span for some of these individuals is like less than 6 seconds, right? Because they're swiping on TikTok and some of these other things. I'm as guilty of it as anybody else. And so I think in order to attract some of these newer Bitcoiners that we're going to want to this next cycle, it's going to require a different sort of tool. And I think that will be the gamification of like everything. And I think we're kind of already seeing that with like Yopaki. And Yopaki is a company that is kind of doing something similar, but they're targeting the Latin America and Mexico and stuff like that. So I do think there will be these kind of new gamified type of apps that will really kind of push the needle forward when it comes to adoption.
And for the listeners, I had both Yopaki and Gypsy was it, right? Both already on the podcast, so you actually can go ahead and maybe I'll link them somewhere. If I forget, you can just look it up in my library of the podcast. I had both already on, and they're really nice podcasts with both of them. It was really nice. I think Oliver Porter was the one from Gypsy. I don't remember because it's been a long while from Yopaki, but it was a great one also. So yeah, really, really cool startups. And you also have a program that you told me earlier about Top Builders, where you basically encourage people to get to that startup space from the project to start up, and there's also even a prize to win for that.
Yeah, so we last year we created this thing called Top Builder. So for people listening at home, they're like, what's Top Builder? It's well, let me kind of preface this by saying, like, building on Bitcoin is extremely hard, because trying to get to revenue, there's really small margins there, and there's really not many ways of doing it when it comes to getting to revenue for building your Bitcoin company. Because a lot of this stuff is open source and, you know, freely available for anybody to download. So, you know, so there's that kind of hurdle you have to pass first. And then after that, it's just, you know, the whole adoption thing that we just discussed, right? It's get user traction, get people, get eyeballs, get all sorts of, you know, press, whatever it is, to take a look at your app is a whole nother thing. So, you know, when you put all these things together, it's very hard to build a Bitcoin company. Not many people last, especially with these bear markets. We were just talking about that earlier. You know, that does become kind of a place when you should be building the hardest. But what happens is every 3 to 4 years, we do get this incredible bull run that we're experiencing right now. And then that should help you, you know, get to that next level. So with all that being said, we created something called Top Builder, and Top Builder is like this, the top chef for Bitcoin. It's like trying to find who's the best of the best when it comes to doing this. And last year, Yopaki Francisco won. He beat out 31 other teams after about 8 weeks. And then he presented here on Startup Day here in Austin, Texas. And he won Top Builder. He got press on CNBC. I think he ended up raising more money, and so like a lot of great things came out of that for him and his team. And so we're going to do it again this year. We want to make it just as big, if not bigger. And right now you can head over to topbuilder.dev and, you know, read all the stuff that's in there. We have judges, we have mentorships. It's basically an 8-week program. And over those 8 weeks, we try to find the best of the best. And after about the first round, which is roughly around 4 weeks, we cut the teams in half. And then after about 2 more weeks, we cut the teams in half again and try to get them down to 5. And then we bring those 5 to Austin to pitch in front of investors and the ecosystem worldwide. So at some point, I do think we'll get to a place where we'll bring them to like we'll actually record it and make it into a TV show, and it'll be like a whole thing. But until we get to that place, for right now, it'll just be a competition.
And it's company, so it's projects, not companies. Like if you have already existing companies, it's not for them.
Yeah, so we're generally, I mean, PlebLab is well positioned, and I would say probably the absolute best place to come for early stage companies. I think we offer the right amount of experience and the right amount of network and community and general support that you would need to elevate your idea or your project from, like, you know, concept stage to full on, hey, let's go pitch this and see if we can have a go at it. Right now during Top Builder, we prefer to look for those types of people that really want to take that idea. But we also do want people who are, you know, either are at a pre-stage or in that kind of area, or if it's just a general project that's looking for funding with grant support, that's trying to do it open source, we want you to apply to as well. So usually how the process goes is, you know, they'll complete the form. If it's not like a bot or something, and it's actually a viable application, we'll schedule a call, and then we'll have a conversation around kind of goals and milestones that they want from their project and what they want to get out of it. And we'll see if that translates well with how we can help them. So it's a very intentional way of going about it, but I think that's the right way in doing something like this, which is, requires a ton of work behind the scenes to pull off. And is something that I think is definitely well needed into the space, because it every year it kind of revitalizes these builders from all over the world, and it gets them, you know, gets them to present to the rest of the ecosystem. And then they have that whole year. Like last year was really interesting. We brought 6 teams, and they all pitched to these investors, and all those 6 teams that were a part of Top Builder, the finalists, you know, all got some sort of funding at some point in the year. They probably didn't get the same sort of like attention and the money like Yopaki did, who won the event, but just like Top Chef, like, you know, the second, third, fourth, fifth place people still got more than enough attention to attract, you know, more users, more audience, you know, more investors, more people that wanted to help them fulfill that project or company.
There's an amazing show. Oh, it's also in America, right? There's Shark Tank. I think it's the American show. We have 2 minutes, 2 millions. It's called in Austria. And there's like probably like in every country, something like that. And I always love that show. I like when there's like new ideas pitched. And there's even, recently when I flew back from, El Salvador, there was something in the plane to watch. There was Money Court. I absolutely loved it. I mean, I don't like Kevin O'Leary that much, but the Money Court was really nice to watch. I just like to have like the businesses present something. And for like Shark Tank, it's like for investing, for Money Court, there's like a dispute and then the court decides on who wins. It's really fun to see. So I think 100% you should do a TV show or like just like a YouTube show or whatever. I think it would be super fun to watch. And yeah, it would also give the companies there even greater attention, because I've seen with companies that present at 2 minutes and 2 millions in Austria, even though sometimes they don't get money from that show, they get so much advertisement, so they can advertise basically their product with the pitch, and they actually usually always do better after that. It's rarely the case that they do worse after that, because to get the attention stuff like that, it has to be a bad company to not benefit from attention. So I would definitely love to see a show there and put something together, even like it doesn't have to be completely professional in the beginning. I would love to see that.
Yeah. So I think it's funny you bring that up, because we've had this idea for like 2 years at this point where we want to do that. But it's, yeah, it would be, I think the really cool thing about what I do at PubLab is just being around the other people that are building these companies and seeing them go through iterations of their product, and just being a viewer of it all. And when I look at like these individuals that come through here, you can kind of see their progression and see where they started and where they are. And it, to me, it's always really inspiring. I just find it so inspiring to see somebody who comes in not really knowing much of anything, and then by the time they leave PubLab, they're a complete boss, you know, when it comes to running their company. And it's always extremely satisfying to me to kind of see that journey and be a part of it in some capacity. But I think to show that to the rest of the world, I think they would be really, 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 really fascinated by the Bitcoin ecosystem, because there's some stuff that happens behind the scenes that is completely, I mean, ridiculously different than the fiat tech space, building a startup. And I think if people saw the amount of work and legal and app store approval and some sort, you know, all these types of things that most people don't realize, like they would be kind of shocked by the amount of just pain and work that these Bitcoin founders have to go through just to get a product released into the world. There's a ton of hurdles that it's like everybody wants to stop you from making a Bitcoin app, you know, and that's not even including your competition. So it's pretty fascinating. As far as the documentary, you brought up documentaries. We actually, in 21, when PubLab was just starting, we actually had a filmmaker follow PubLab, and he actually made a movie around us, around the Austin community at the time. It's called The Bitcoiners Movie. And so a lot of what you're talking about, like seeing behind the scenes, you kind of see that already inside that movie. But yeah.
I partnered up with Coin Vigilante. This is the most beautiful Bitcoin timepiece that I ever saw created by anyone. Look at that beauty. I love it so much. Coin Vigilante made a perfect Bitcoin watch. That's the perfect, subtle, elegant way to go out there and show that you are a Bitcoiner. And that watch brand is Bitcoin only. And Coin Vigilante just dropped a completely new and amazing Genesis edition of their watch collections. You have the date of the first ever mined Bitcoin block in there. And of course, also the block height and which epoch we are currently in. I love the level of detail they put in this masterpiece. And make sure to check out those amazing Coin Vigilante timepieces down in the descriptions. I love those watches so, so much. If you watch or listen to my podcast on a regular basis, I guess you already bought some Bitcoin. And now the most important step is to keep the Bitcoin. Keep them secure in a hardware wallet. My personal recommendation for hardware wallet is the Bitbox. It's super secure. It's simple to set up. It's also a perfect gift for a friend who has still the Bitcoin on an exchange. And you can get a 5% discount with the code Robin at the checkout. Visit bitbox.swiss/Robin to get your Bitbox. And the next step is to really level up your sovereignty as an individual. You have to have the most secure self-custody setup. You have to secure your own devices. You have to protect your privacy. You have to set up an inheritance plan. And depending on where you live, you even want to have a plan B, a citizenship where you can move in case something goes really, really wrong. And through all those steps, the Bitcoin Way is guiding you through step by step. And if you visit thebitcoinway.com/partners/Robin, you even get a 30-minute free call to find out how you can level up your sovereignty. There could be some, even in my brain was just American Idol, as you Americans Idol, as you said, because you like have those 8 weeks and you can really see how they come in and how they then get to the big stage, and like the viewer can actually build like almost an intimate relationship and rooting for people, and then they fall out of the round and stuff like that. So I think it has a lot of potential, but obviously if you do something like that, you need a team of people who really get behind to the storytelling and editing. Like that's a whole operation. It's a whole new company. Maybe someone should pitch that company this year's BlabLab and do next year.
That'd be great. I think like seeing the net transformation, like when like we were talking about Francisco earlier, I met him in 21. I actually met that guy in 2021, and he was just a pleb that was snacking sats and had this idea for a company called Yopaki. And he had a lot of what you see now in the app, but when he came into PlebLab in 22, it was like, just let's get to work. And so he's been grinding for a really long time to make Yopaki happen. But you know, it's no wonder it's like gotten to where it's at, because I think when you meet Francisco and you meet the type of person he is, you really realize that this guy's special. Like there's something really special about them. And I think everybody individually at PlebLab has that extra thing that you need to really make a go out of it. I think a lot of our founders inside of PlebLab have that extra twinkle in their eye that you need to have as a founder to get through the hard times and the easy times. So
absolutely, yeah. And yeah, Francisco, that's the name I forgot before. Thank you so much. Yeah, perfect. And one more thing on that topic I have, because it is, as you said, hard to build a Bitcoin business and build a Bitcoin startup. For me, there's like two main reasons. Maybe you have other reasons also. The reason is like a Bitcoin business usually tries to get to Bitcoiners, and Bitcoiners really don't want to part with their Bitcoin. It's like on the consumer side, and then even on the investor side, if you are a Bitcoiner that wants to invest, you have a really high hurdle rate. Like just keeping your money in Bitcoin is quite profitable. Like it generates a lot of additional purchasing power for you. So to invest in a startup that has a high likelihood to fail, because Bitcoin has a very, 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 very low likelihood to fail, you really have to pitch a quality idea. And it's different maybe to the altcoin, shitcoin space, where it's just like thrown around with money, and also fiat space, where if you save in fiat, you are really incentivized to get like, or to sponsor all the startups. So maybe it's interesting to see like, what did you notice in that space because of that new hurdle rate, because Bitcoiners don't want to part with the Bitcoin? And maybe also an insight of what if all the people get Bitcoin and have Bitcoin in this world, how different will be the financial space and the venture capital space then?
Yeah, I think there's something that most people don't really take into account when it comes to investing in Bitcoin startups. And I think there's people like Michael Saylor and people like that. And I definitely see it. I think I've seen it for a while now. And I've written about this. I have a blog called Thriller Bitcoin. If you want to pull it up, or if you want to, you have to sign up. But it's I've talked about this, and I've actually written about it. And I think I call it shadow play, but I actually think it's more of a zero sum game. I think when you look at it from like a Bitcoin investment lens, there's only 21 million Bitcoin in the world. I think if you're playing that game, there's only so many Bitcoin out there. And if you look at where it's allocated right now, I think the majority of it is, you know, there's some in mining companies, and then there's some in general startups. And I think a lot of the startups, especially in the Bitcoin ecosystem, have a Bitcoin sitting on their balance sheet. And that, especially when you find a company like Jippy, right, or a company like Yopaki, that's going to be having some sort of sats flow. The more and more that sats flow is, the spigot of it is turned up, and the more and more that's flowing into the company, the more and more that Bitcoin is still in on that balance sheet. And so at some point, I think the majority of this Bitcoin that we know as Bitcoiners is going to be sitting on some sort of company balance sheet. Because if we all believe in hyper Bitcoinization, and we all believe that there's some sort of way that we get there, and I believe it's through Bitcoin companies and more Bitcoin businesses, well, then you kind of have to believe that Bitcoin is going to be sitting on there. It's no different than Apple sitting on $4.5 billion, just sitting on your treasury. It's the same thing that'll be locked up with Bitcoin companies. We're a long ways away to getting there, but I think when you see companies like Jippy and Yopaki, the ones that are coming out and they're trying to raise, I think you kind of have to be a moron not to want to invest in something like that, because these are some of the companies that are going to potentially change the world. And that's always been my pitch. It's like, why wouldn't you invest in Strike? I wouldn't even invest in anything outside of Bitcoin companies, because I know a Bitcoin company is holding Bitcoin on their balance sheet. So I wouldn't invest in anything else. I would invest in Bitcoin and like Bitcoin companies, and like, that's it. I wouldn't invest in like Tesla, Microsoft. Like, I personally believe at some point, you know, Apple will probably just get bought out by MicroStrategy if they don't get on a Bitcoin standard. I mean, those dollars are just going to dilute like a melting ice cube, like he talks about. And so I think I'm incredibly bearish on Apple, incredibly bearish on some of these other tech companies, because they don't have Bitcoin on the balance sheet. I mean, that could change overnight, but right now I don't see. That's always been my pitch when people are like, oh, you know, why would I invest in a Bitcoin startup? And it's like, why wouldn't you invest in a Bitcoin startup? Why would you invest in anything else that doesn't have Bitcoin on its balance sheet? And that's kind of where the humongous risk is. And to be honest, the other thing I would say is just like, the founders in Bitcoin are kind of these, like, you know, these next level autists as far as the way they think through things. They play like 4D chess. And so and that's another reason when Plub Lab started, we were working at a Capital Factory, which is a tech kind of co-working space. And a lot of people were doing kind of tech startups, and those type of founders that I would run into over there were not nearly the same caliber type of founders that you find in the Bitcoin space. It's like principles, morals, like everything. And so what you're getting with a Bitcoin company is not only some like really great individual founders with high morals, high principles, but you're also getting a Bitcoin company that has Bitcoin on its balance sheet. And if you're lucky, a company that can generate Sats flow that will drive up that revenue and that purchasing price. So that's my pitch for it.
It's kind of probably what you see with MicroStrategy now. Even though they don't have a Bitcoin business, they do generate revenue, a software business, a traditional one that's been there since a long while. But the idea is the same, right? You have Bitcoin as a treasury, and then you even get like kind of an leveraged Bitcoin play where you have Bitcoin, but also revenue on top of that, where you can buy more Bitcoin with that. Is that what you're kind of saying?
Yes. Can you explain that last part real quick?
I was just saying, like, if you have basically a Bitcoin company, you buy Bitcoin with that because they have a Bitcoin treasury. And then on top of the Bitcoin treasury, you get a revenue, which they are buying Bitcoin with. So when you only buy Bitcoin, you just buy Bitcoin and wait. When you buy a Bitcoin company, you buy Bitcoin plus a working company that in the best case gets profits in and reinvests into the Bitcoin treasury. So it should in theory grow faster than Bitcoin itself if they have Bitcoin as a treasury plus profits that flow into the treasury.
Yeah, and I think
Does it make sense?
Yeah, you're kind of leading to the same thing that I've written about. I think the biggest problem is you have these traditional currencies, you know, which governments can like, you know, issue without any limits. And I think the interesting dynamic among Bitcoiners is that we have this thing called NGU technology. So number go up. So the value of Bitcoin is not static. It can rise. There's all sorts of complexity. But I think with the Bitcoin ETFs, it definitely gives it some kind of baseline, right? And I think when you put that finite quantity and that fluctuating value, there's a fruitful kind of bounty that comes into play here, especially when it comes to enriching the entire ecosystem of Bitcoin. And so when you look at this kind of zero sum nature of like, of transactional exchanges into like a layered interaction, and I think it evolves into something that is far more significant, and kind of like beneath the surface that probably isn't apparent right now, but the more and more you kind of watch this closely, at least from my vantage point, there's a deeper game of strategy that's being played right now. And I don't think people are actually talking about it. And I think in this kind of post Bitcoin ETF world, you know, you're going to have gold, you know, become that next haven probably after Bitcoin, right? I just think the paradigms are kind of changing. And I think, you know, prior to the ETF and prior to MicroStrategy, you would have like an entire like deep understanding of you know, of where dollars are going and bonds and stuff like that. But I think as far as Bitcoiners and what we do as founders, I think you kind of have to embrace the change head on, and you kind of have to be willing to play to this world that is not quite there yet. And, you know, and I don't think that's dangerous or crazy either. I think there was a time when Bitcoin was definitely a fringe like digital asset. But I think the more and more we see it find itself on corporate balance sheets, I think companies will have a fiduciary responsibility to add that to their already existing business to not only drive growth, but to drive revenue and to drive opportunity, because just the cost and the negative effect that could come from that equity value by not having Bitcoin on their balance sheet can lead to probably all sorts of bad happenings. But I definitely see Bitcoin startups as like a cheat code to kind of getting there faster. But that's kind of how I see it on my side. But if anybody's interested, definitely go check out Thriller Bitcoin. I've written about it. It's called Shadow Play, the article. And you have to sign up, but and I'm definitely going to write more because I've thought about it more deeply since then. And I do think I don't think this has been talked about very often in the Bitcoin space, at least in prior cycles. But I think people are starting to understand it. I definitely know Sailor definitely understands it.
He understands it very well. Yeah. I loved it a lot, actually. And it's... It's kind of also why I decided back then to go from some stocks and some Bitcoin to only Bitcoin. Because I came to the conclusion that I don't want to be involved in companies that don't get that they have to have a Bitcoin treasury. And I came to that conclusion in like end of 2020, beginning of 2021, where I just like kept, where I just like pushed everything to the side except Tesla and Bitcoin. But then I also pushed Tesla away in 2021 because it was clear to me that they understand it better than the other big S&P 500 companies, but they still don't get it. They still have a long way to go. And I think to this day, they are holding Bitcoin to their credit. So like they still hold more Bitcoin than probably 99% of all Bitcoiners. But they could do so much more. And Elon is that one founder that can do those crazy things. And Apple has a way harder way to go there. Microsoft has a way harder way to go there. But they will also come eventually to that conclusion. Maybe, did you heard with MicroStrategy that Michael Saylor actually has a 3-minute presentation for Microsoft that they hold because of that shareholder proposal. And now Microsoft has to listen to 3 minutes of Michael Saylor.
Yeah, that's amazing. I've heard so many stories about Saylor, but there's this one where he's on a call with somebody and the person doesn't is like, you know, buying shit coins and stuff like that. And the story goes where Saylor tells this person to buy Bitcoin and he hangs up the phone, and then the guy comes from the other room and he talks to the rest of the people in the room and he goes, "Can you believe this guy? He just told me to drop everything and buy Bitcoin." And the people in the room didn't have the heart to tell the guy who was in charge that, yeah, he's right. But I've heard similar stories where he kind of does that. But yeah, it's incredible. I think the way Bitcoin has changed here in the past 3 years. And I think the a lot of the ETF and some of that other thing is just already it's just caused it to severely just like really catapult things. I'm sure you see a lot of it, Robin. You talk to a lot of people, so you probably see it probably more so than anybody, because you're getting a much bigger picture of everything around the world. So,
yeah, if I actually hold it up 10 years, I will be probably a really good informed Bitcoiner in 10 years about Bitcoin. I'm talking every day to a different Bitcoiner. But it's interesting for me, this traditional financial space coming into Bitcoin. I mean, even MicroStrategy is coming from a very traditional business model that has nothing to do with Bitcoin, but they are coming aggressively into Bitcoin. Then we have the Bitcoin ETF coming into Bitcoin. And actually on Bitcoin conference, I sometimes hear that notion of like, we don't want that. We want to have like the pure mission of Bitcoin, that Bitcoin maxi vision that as Saylor calls it, the crypto anarchist vision of it. Yeah. I personally think Bitcoin is for everyone, and like we want also Bitcoin for our enemies. Like Bitcoin is also for the people we disagree with. But how do you like, or how do you see the traditional financial space with BlackRock, with the Bitcoin ETFs now entering into Bitcoin and maybe potentially trying to screw with it?
Yeah, I've talked a lot about this, but I think personally, I can't help but, and I've talked about this in another podcast, but I can't help but want to know if they really understand Bitcoin. Reason being, I don't think they realize what they're doing to themselves. like if you roll the tape, Robin, and you're kind of playing this out, like, do they know they're like obsoleting their own, like, you know, I don't want to say it, but like, do you know what I'm trying to say? Like,
I think they are maybe even embarrassed. Like there's a guy who just sits on the beach in El Salvador that is outperforming each and every investor that is sitting in BlackRock and talking to all the clients. At some point, the clients is like, don't you have a Bitcoin strategy? So I think they're kind of forced into it. I don't know to what extent they know it. Like I have no clue.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know either. You know, that's not my lane. But I just always wonder if they see this playing out the same way a lot of us Bitcoiners do. But as far as do I see them going into making a muck of things? I don't see any sign of it yet. But I wouldn't put it past a behemoth like that. But I mean, you know, like you said earlier, Bitcoin is for enemies, so it's for everybody.
Absolutely. The one thing that I'm fairly certain about, that they have a lot of employees only focused on researching and making presentations around Bitcoin, really like diving deep into the community. And I'm almost fairly certain there's like a few employees that just listen to all the podcasts, listen to the community, listen to what's going on Twitter and extracting all the information, because they have just so much resources. It would be so easy for them to do. And I see some of the presentations they do, and they are really good. Like they really resonate also with Bitcoiners. So they kind of have to the presentations they sometimes do, this, it doesn't seem like they are just like an ignorant financial advisor did them. It's like someone that actually looked into the Bitcoin community a little bit more than just the surface. I don't know who told me that. Like even before the Bitcoin Bitcoin ETF came, he said BlackRock is since years full on in. They have like blocks of people that just research that. And back then I did not believe him that much, but now what I see is maybe they actually have a lot of people that just research Bitcoin and report to someone higher, and then they kind of make a strategy out of it, because what the presentations say, it's not that bad. With there's no second best, it's a unique diversifier, and the messages inside of the slides also, I don't know if you've seen it. They made a slide comparing Bitcoin and Ethereum, and they just nailed it. Bitcoin is the commodity, Bitcoin is a secure thing and stuff like that. Even though they made the Ethereum ETF, I think a major mistake, but, Bitcoin doesn't care about that also. So I think they have researchers and a lot of them on Bitcoin.
That's fascinating. I never heard that before, but that makes a lot of sense. They're going to have to download 5 of your podcasts a week to catch up with all yours. So they have a lot of work.
Maybe AI is helping them and just putting the transcripts in and getting out of it. At least that's, I do it like that. I don't know if I ever said another podcast, but before I interview someone, I cannot listen to 5 podcasts a day before I interview someone. I download from YouTube all the transcripts where a guest was previously on, and then I ask ChatGPT what were the topics they talked about, what are the most controversial opinions that the guest had, what are questions that the guest should have been asked but has never been asked before. So trying to get a picture of that, and then never ask the questions what GPT gives me. But it gives me a really nice idea of who the guest is and what he's talking about. And it gives me direction for the conversation where I want to bring it to. And usually what ends up happening, I write down 10 topics, and after the third, the conversation is just free flowing and it's going anywhere. and I completely forget my notes, but this allows me to get a sense of the guest within 10 minutes.
That's amazing. I would be curious to ask you, do you see your I guess because you have a media company, right, with your podcast, do you see yourself as somebody who is strategically thinking about putting Bitcoin on your own balance sheet for the future of your podcast?
100%. I mean, I have right now a self-employed company. There's something like that in Austria. It's really simple to set up. It's just you fill out 2 forms. It's really without bureaucracy a lot. And you are income-based taxes, especially if you have income with less than 50k a year. It's really a nice thing to do. And in the first year, it's like you can write off the expenses of the year prior to starting up everything that you have to that business. So like it's hard to get over that income even with 50K. So everything I earn goes directly into private property. And most of my income is already in Bitcoin. From all my sponsors, except one, is paying me in Bitcoin, and all of them offering me to pay in Bitcoin. I just like have this one to pay my fiat bills. So I opt in to get the fiat things. So it's really fun, to have directly Bitcoin, and I keep a zero fiat balance. I do it like that. I have a credit line of 10K. And sometimes I go a little bit in minus, sometimes I go a little bit in plus, but I always try to level it up with zero fiat. That's my goal. I always want to have just like zero fiat and 100% Bitcoin. And that's how I operate. But I'm also a company that just has myself. Like I just have to feed myself. So I don't have employees and stuff like that. If I have employees and I'm responsible for their families and their salaries and stuff like that, I might have a bigger reserve for short-term expenses in fiat. Maybe I'm like 95%, or I don't know, maybe I have a bigger credit line or whatever. I did not think about that till now. But I operate on a full Bitcoin standard, get most of the money paid in Bitcoin, and have 100% of my treasury in Bitcoin. And yeah, maybe at some point I pay people in Bitcoin when I get in my first employee.
Dude, that's amazing. That's so inspiring. I think you and there's several others in the space that I've talked to that are doing similar things with their podcasts. It's fascinating, man. It's fascinating.
It's crazy. And yeah, I love it a lot because I started this in February with almost no income and we had like my fiat salary, and then it went down like to almost zero. And now I'm actually above my fiat level on a complete basis. If you look at hourly basis, I'm still under that because I work way more hours than before. But I also don't consider it work anymore. So that's different too. But yeah, it's been an inspiring journey for me to just have this podcast and be involved in the Bitcoin community. All those Bitcoiners I talk to are inspiring me so much and just make me... Someone came up to me in the El Salvador conference and asked me, "Hey, Robin, are you burning out? Like, I have more energy than ever. Like, it's not even close to that. Like, I came further away from that with quitting my fiat job and working instead of, I worked previously like 30 hours per week. And now I work like, I don't know, 60 or 65. I don't know. I never counted them, but probably somewhere around that range. And it's amazing. Bitcoin, it's an obsession that I have."
That's amazing. That's great to hear. I mean, I feel similarly with the things that I do. It doesn't necessarily feel like work. I think the only time I really need to take time off is to do all the normal things in life, you know, like wash clothes and clean the house, stuff like that. But yeah.
Which gives me maybe one question here before we end. What should Bitcoiners be focusing on? Because we have this obsession that we really want to be in Bitcoin and that we really want to contribute, but everyone has just like a very limited time. What do you think with seeing so many startups, with seeing so many entrepreneurs, what is the like the one thing Bitcoiners should be focusing on when the aim and the goal is driving Bitcoin adoption forward?
Yeah, I think we live in a one, like this is a era, like this is going to be like once in a millennia type of technology. I think we're living at a time right now where you literally have the option to getting the hardest money ever created on earth. You could potentially do that one of two ways, at least the way I see it. You can either, you know, mind your fiat job and, you know, keep snacking and, you know, do it humbly, or you could, you know, really get in the game and like start building up a Bitcoin company, right? Like you're doing your media company and you went ahead and put full effort into it and now you're thriving. I think as well, most Bitcoiners should really look at themselves and say, "Hey, like I probably only have the next 10, 15 years at most to really make a go at it and try to get as much Bitcoin as I can, either individually or as a company. And then why not both, right? That would be my thing, is like trying to get people to really believe in themselves to going after this once in a lifetime technology, and actually trying to, you know, make a difference for not only yourself and your current family and you know, friends, but like for future generations, because your kids depend on it, right?
Absolutely. Is that, it's a difficult question for me also to answer, but should we be also more involved in politics? It seems like this, because this year politics has been such a huge topic in Bitcoin. Is that a good spend time as a Bitcoiner to be trying to infiltrate the political system?
I don't know. I think I've said this before. I think most everybody has a job in Bitcoin, you know, whatever that job is. You know, mine is to help startups and entrepreneurs get to success. I think, you know, yours is to interview some of the best people in the space and, you know, share your opinions and all that kind of stuff. I think there are some Bitcoiners in the space that, you know, they do feel like their job is to get some sort of politician or some sort of group into our ecosystem and be a driving force of change for it. I would say that would be my answer. But you know, I'm somebody that's not on Twitter. You know, I have just a Noster account and like a podcast and a blog, right? I think that's enough for me to get out my opinions, and that's enough for me to kind of you know, do that kind of thing. And and the rest of the stuff that I really love doing is the real world interactions. Like, I love going to meetups, I love talking to new people, like I love going to conferences and stuff like that. Like, that's where I get the bulk of my value from. But I would say if your value is derived from, you know, doing stuff with politicians, then that might be something that you should pursue if that's what you're interested in.
I think that's a great point. And this is where, like, you know, Tennis Porter is perfect in where he is right now with like the political force, and I would be really bad in it. Even though I was in politics before, I don't like it. I cannot be as frank as I am usually.
I met him one time and it was very brief, and all he talked about was the politics stuff. So I think it's one of those things where he's probably just really interested in that. So that's probably, you know, he should keep pursuing it if that's what he loves doing, you know. But
absolutely,
he's somebody that I think he was early on all that kind of strategic reserve stuff. I think I want to say he was talking about that well before anybody that I remember.
And he's pushing really nicely on it. He was I think, like, also for everyone that wants to get to know him better or already knows him and wants to listen to podcasts, I also have with Dennis Porter one. It's so funny because I did that in the beginning more and more. And now it seems like when someone comes up in the podcast, I want to get that tip because I have it in the library. And maybe I just put a permanent disclaimer on this, like, each person that is mentioned in this podcast probably already was on the podcast. So go back in the library and find him.
It's interesting you bring that up. Just real quick, the Texas Blockchain Conference is this week. So this is like a group of people that come together to influence Texas politics with Bitcoin and stuff like that. So that's going on this week in Dallas. And, yeah, it's kind of falls into what you were talking about with all the politicians and getting involved. And you know, that's a conference that I don't attend to. I have been to it before here when it was in Austin. And it was just really boring to me. It was just like politics and Bitcoin. And I found it incredibly boring. You know, I think people have to find their niche and then just kind of keep doing it.
Absolutely. 100%. Were you previously on Twitter? As you said, like, you're now just on Nostra, or you switched, or you never started Twitter?
You know, I had a pretty good following on Twitter for a really long time, but I think it started just taking more and more of my time during the day. And I just kind of realized that it's probably best just to focus on the real world stuff and not things that I have no control over, you know. And kind of came to that like two and a half years ago.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
So perfect. Really cool. Perfect. And let's come to the end of the podcast. We always have two questions in the podcast. The one question is always the same question for each guest. What can we learn from you besides Bitcoin?
Oh man, I really, really love watching like films. Like I'm fascinated by films, fascinated by film directors. I love reading about them. I love reading biographies. Like I'm very obsessed with that. That's one of the things that you could ask me a question about a film or ask me a question about a director and I would know probably something about it. I'm still working on my European catalog, I just saw this movie this past weekend called Victoria. It's a German movie, and all done in like 140 minutes. It's one shot, one single shot. And it takes place in a span of like, 2.5 hours in some place in Berlin, I think, and amazing film in the 2015, I think, when it came out. And I was just like blown away how like near perfect the film was. But looking into it, you kind of find out that they actually shot that movie 3 times because it starts off like 4 a.m. and it ends closer to like 6:30, 7 a.m. And the last time that they filmed it was the one that they kept in the film, and it never broke cut. Like it never cut. The actors just memorize exactly where they needed to go throughout the whole movie, and it takes place in like 2-mile, 5-mile block radius. But yeah, movie's called Victoria. No, Veronica, not Victoria. Veronica.
That's fascinating. I have an interesting question for you, because there's obvious Bitcoin movies that are not about Bitcoin, like The Matrix. Last time I asked the same question that I will give you now, the answer was Barbie. So keep that in mind. The question is, what is the most unexpected Bitcoin movie that is not about Bitcoin?
I think it's the first one I ever saw, like where I realized I was like, that is a Bitcoin movie. And then it was later on where I realized other people knew it was like a Bitcoin movie. But at the time I didn't think about it like that. Probably Fight Club, where I was yeah, that's totally a Bitcoin movie. But at the time I didn't think it was. And then you watch it back and you're like, yep, those guys look like they would all be Bitcoiners.
Except the first rule of the Fight Club.
Yeah, you don't talk about Bitcoin. Yeah, Fight Club. Yeah.
It's like the reverse of that. It's like you talk about Bitcoin all day long until everyone gets annoyed by it.
Yeah, for sure.
Really cool. Thank you so much. We have entered in the podcast where the previous guest is asking a question for the next guest without knowing who the next guest actually is. Your question is a really interesting one. Do you think we will have a block size increase within the next 10 years?
Wow, that's a tough one. Gosh, do I have to say yes or no? Or can I just like say, I don't know? Because I honestly don't know. But I think if I had to give an answer right now, I would say no. But I would say I don't know.
Yeah, it's a really interesting conversation. I just had it also in El Salvador. I talked with someone like a little bit longer on that. Because on the one hand, if we go ahead and actually do that, we kind of open the floodgate of like potential future increases. At the other hand, it's like, why don't we increase it? We don't increase it to have it fully decentralized because of the full node, to have the cost of a full node low, but the space, the storage of the full node, is also getting cheaper and cheaper with advancing technology. So maybe we can actually, because like if the cost of, I don't know, 1 terabyte or the cost of storing the full Bitcoin node right now is dropping like 10x or like 5x or something like that, if that drops a lot, why not increase it 2x the block size? It's a logical argument. But then on the other hand, once you increase it, then maybe something happens where like increase it all the time and then all of a sudden it gets so big. So it's a really difficult topic.
Who was that you were talking with so I can check it out when it comes out?
I know that was not recorded, actually. It was just on the El Salvador trip. I don't record podcasts when I'm on conferences, so I can focus on the conference and be like present there. But there are some conversations. I just had that while walking through San Salvador. So it was not even an official trip or something like that. But yeah, it would be fun to watch that or record that.
Somebody recommended that Block Size Wars book that I still haven't checked out. I think it's just sitting in my library in Audible, but I need to go and read that because I'm sure they kind of talk about that too. I think for me, we focus more on Lightning here in Puebla. I mean, we do Bitcoin stuff too, on-chain stuff, but just from what the guys tell me here, it does seem like, you know, it's just going to take some time for Lightning to scale and do all that sort of thing. And it's just, so that's kind of where we're at right now with all that, I think. But interesting. I need to look more into it. So.
Absolutely. And it's also for me, we 100% need layer two. Like we will never scale to 8 billion people on the base layer. That I think that's just not possible. So we need scalability on layer two, maybe on Lightning, maybe Fediment, maybe Liquid, whatever. I'm not that technical, unfortunately. So there has to be a really good argument for me to scale up the block size more than just, oh yeah, like cost came down. Like, oh, but just because we can do it, like, why should we do it? Like, what is the actual improvement? The actual, like, show me, like, why it's so much better to open that fundamental piece of Bitcoin that we fought so long in the block size war. So that's also for me, like, it has to be a really solid argument, but I'm not saying it will never happen. I'm just saying, like, it has to be such a airtight, solid argument for me to convince to be like for bigger blocks that I also wouldn't say it will happen in the next 10 years. But I think it's possible. But if I had to choose one, I would also, as you choose, no, just for that reason. Yeah.
Yeah, I think you're right. I honestly don't know. That's not my area of expertise, but I would say no by default. But yeah. Interesting.
Absolutely. Really cool. Perfect. Then before I let you go, where can people find you, ask questions, DM you, reach out to you?
Yeah, definitely check out pleblab.dev. If you're interested in building a Bitcoin company, there's an application there and you can apply. If you're interested in being a part of Top Builder, go to topbuilder.dev and apply there and you'll be able to get a chance to win some money and get some notoriety for your project, and then maybe even get flown out here to Austin and hang out with a bunch of Bitcoiners, and we'll have a good time. But if you're building a Bitcoin project or a company, or you have an idea for one, definitely apply for Top Builder.
Amazing, really cool. Then yeah, thank you so much for being on and for sharing all your knowledge here. Also, thank you so much for everyone that's watching and listening, for joining us today. As always, I'll be back tomorrow with another episode. Bye-bye.